The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. You're listening to Germ Warfare with Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Germ Warfare at tntradio.live. That's my email address. Send me an email. Let me know where in the world you are. Thank you to everybody who has been sending me emails and letting me know where you are mailing from. I do enjoy that very much. Jump into the live chat on TNT's website, tntradio.live. I have it open in front of me, so you are welcome to say hi and let me know where you are listening from. Of course, you can always download the TNT app. It's in the Apple and Google store, which basically means that you can listen to my show anytime you want, or any of the shows anytime you want. There is a whole pile of ways actually to listen to TNT. It's all on the website. It's like you can do it via YouTube and Rumble and Odyssey. I don't know. I haven't tried any of those methods, but there is a whole list of options. The point is that you can listen to TNT live or after the fact. Man, I tell you, I watched such a great movie last night. What's it called? The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Murray, what a great movie. I know everybody's probably seen it by now, but it's just so beautiful. The directing, the cinematography, it's just such a pleasure to watch. And these days, finding a good movie is very difficult because everything has got some sort of agenda and some sort of woke message in it. But this movie was just so lovely to watch. Really, really great stuff. And if you have watched it, watch it again. It's such an uplifting movie. It makes me want to go to Greenland. It makes me want to visit Iceland. I have never visited any of those sort of Nordic countries, and now I'm feeling very inspired. I'd love to see Iceland, actually. Greenland, maybe not so much, but definitely Iceland. Murray is telling me that he saw a dog movie called Dog Gone. I haven't heard of that. Is it on Netflix? Yes, it's on Netflix. Ah, okay. Okay, well, I'll ask John and see if he's watched it. Are we ready for John? Let's go.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
John O'Sullivan, thank you for joining me in the trenches, as always.
Hi, Jeremy. Great to be back with you again.
Have you seen The Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
I saw the original, but I'm looking at the Wikipedia now. The new one came out in 2013, 10 years ago, with Ben Stiller. I haven't got around to watching it yet. Now you've given it a good promo, I think I'll look it up and I'll take a look.
I didn't even know that there is an original one. Now you've completely derailed me. Is there an original one?
Yeah, 1947. It goes all the way back to then, the black and white era. I remember watching it as a kid. Again, it's the kind of film that you grew up with as a kid. I think it was Danny Kaye, one of those films where it's the golden age of Hollywood, where all the great stars were there. And great, to me, a great comedy film, really. You know, it was one of the films that I grew up with, iconic. Virginia Mayo, I believe, was in it. Even the great Boris Karloff, Boris Karloff, known for his role as Frankenstein, the monster, Frankenstein's monster. I mean, it was one of those films, you don't forget. And as you say, it does make an impact on you.
I can't imagine the original having the same sort of cinematography, though, as the new one, because it was black and white. I mean, the new one is just so beautiful to watch.
Well, actually, I'll correct myself. It was actually in color. I've now clicked onto imdb.com, and sure enough, it was originally shown in color, but I'm old enough to remember when I was a kid, we had black and white TV, Jeremy, so we weren't so lucky. Yeah, it was in color.
You're showing your age, John.
yeah, can't hide it. It's a fact. Yes, I'm a boomer. I'm a boomer, without a doubt.
It depends on who's looking, because I would also be called that by I suppose the new generation. You know what's interesting though is when I remember growing up, we had, you know, the old box TV. But I didn't grow up with black and white TV. I grew up with color TV, but it had the it had the bunny ears on top, you know, to find the signal, and it would have that and do you remember that test signal on the screen?
Yeah, the test card. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, in the UK we had that too. America they had it. Multicolored. Yeah, obviously a test of graphics. You got all sorts of shapes and colors, and the idea was to see if you could, you know, get a faithful image, and that was the go-to thing. And I remember when that came on late at night, that was your cue to go to bed. And I remember it well.
We had that as well in South Africa, actually.
Yeah, good old days. Yeah, back in the day, we had three TV channels we had when I was a kid growing up. And, you know, for some reason, we always had something to watch on TV. Now we've got like over 200 or more, and always struggling to find something worth watching. You know, it's crazy, isn't it? The more choice you have, the less you want to watch. It's I think there's a theory behind that. I'll have to look it up for you. But scientifically, yeah, the more we have, the more we want, and the less happy we are.
It's so interesting. You said you had three channels growing up. Do you know that I also had three channels growing up? South Africa was obviously, you know, it was an apartheid still when I grew up. And I remember only having three channels. And I think two of them were Afrikaans, which was the language of the government. And in order to listen to anything in English, you would have to, for only certain shows, you'd have to turn on the radio and tune in onto a certain frequency. And the English translation would play via the radio.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And, you know, I've just reminded myself that this idea of too much choice is a bad thing. It's me being from Principia Scientific International, always got a scientific angle on these kind of things, Jeremy. And I can tell you that Barry Schwartz, a psychology professor at Swarthmore College, he wrote the book, The Paradox of Choice, Why More is Less. He did studies to show that having more options actually causes anxiety. It stresses us out. So we have so much choice. It's called FOMO, fear of missing out. We never settle because too much choice means that you could be watching something better. And that's a human anxiety problem that we have. And lo and behold, I mean, I don't know about you, but I notice other people have had it. You know, there's always something on. Have I missed this? Have I missed that? You know, we live in these days now where,
No, sorry, go on.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I do get that sometimes when I realize I might have missed some big event. And with the hectic pace of life, there's so much information, isn't there, Jeremy? I mean, the work we do at TNT Radio, we do know that things are coming through all the time. And because we all have so many different diverse backgrounds, there are things that come up and I think, well, I didn't know that. And you think, why did I not know that? Really, you think, well, have I got the time to spend all day reading newspapers or checking up people's different sources? And you know, lo and behold, you know, the more we have, the less happy we are, Jeremy. I think that's a condition of modern life.
Yes, I agree with you, George, completely. In fact, I was chatting with a friend yesterday, and we spoke about the idea that there are so many more ways to communicate with people, and yet loneliness seems to dominate still. I mean, I can tell you, I struggle to communicate with some of my even closest friends because there's so much going on. And even though it's the easiest thing in the world to communicate with friends, I communicate not as often as I'd like to.
Yeah, I have that problem too. I think the ease of communication choices now, I've moved around a lot in my life, Jeremy. Most of my life, I was a school teacher. I moved around a lot for work. Lived all kinds of places in the UK, from London to the Midlands to South Wales, where I am now. And internationally, I met my American wife online back in 1997. And it was so easy back then. You know, there were no options there for online dating. We just were in a chat room and just got together. But now, you know, you've got things like Tinder, Bumble, all that kind of thing. It's forced down our throats. And I speak to young people today. My two children, they're in their late 20s. And I hear stories about young people dating online. Dating online is now the way to go, isn't it? Nobody meets anybody in real life anymore. It's funny, isn't it? We kind of want to go and see where all the shop window effect, isn't it? The shop window, so much in the shop window, so much choice, never really happy.
I find that so sad, hey? Dating online, wow, that is just a tragedy.
Yeah, you've never done it then, no.
Dating online, not a chance. I mean, look, no. I have no issue with the phrase online dating, but when I say that, I mean that in the sense that you know, you might be part of a website where you can virtually meet people, but then you obviously meet them in real life. You don't continue that.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Yeah. Ideally, the goal is to meet naturally. You know, the ideal way to meet somebody is in your day-to-day life, because that makes life so much easier. You're in closer proximity. The thing with online dating is quite often you're talking to people in different countries. You know, the idea now of foreign brides, you know, it's really taken off in the US and the UK. People are now traveling to the Far East to meet their love of their life. You know, they call it the eBay brides, the eBay bride thing, you know, and, you know, it's quite shocking. I watched a documentary on the Faroe Islands. If you heard of the Faroe Islands, they're an islands north of Scotland, in between Iceland and Scotland. Mm-mm. And they have a crisis in for men, because it's mainly a fishing community. And they've got like a shortage of 2,000 women. And the guys in the Faroe Islands are going online and meeting young ladies in Thailand and those areas, and bringing them over, entertaining them. And it's becoming a multicultural paradise, apparently. Hundreds of marriages now in the Faroe Islands where local fishermen have married foreign brides. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's a way of the world. I'm just checking my numbers here. And according to eHarmony.com, they've got the stats for the US. I'm reading for the US here. eHarmony says that 40 million Americans now are using online dating websites as we speak. 27% of young adults have used online dating, nearly a third. And that's up 10% in the last 10 years. So really, it seems to be the way the world is moving.
It's interesting, though. I mean, Holly makes a comment here. She says, I think internet dating is a tragedy as well. Real life is so important to get out there. But there is actually an upside to meeting somebody online. For example, my wife and I met online, and we spoke perhaps 2 weeks before we met in real life. Now, why I think there is something special about meeting online is because all it does is that it expands your geographical parameters. If you think about it, you'll only meet people if you go to a pub or if you go to your local church or, I don't know, at a gathering on a Friday night. How else do you meet people? And you'll always meet the same sort of overlapping people if you have a very small friendship circle. So when you say get out there, what does that mean? What must you do? Must you go and walk around in a shopping mall and look for somebody and, you know, and say hi? Or do you open an app and you find people in your location who you start chatting to, and then you go and meet them in real life? I don't really see a problem with that.
No, I don't either. And I'm quite happy to do it. And I've been doing it right back from the early days of the internet, Jeremy. I actually had a job in Suffolk in east of England at a school right near Martlesham, which is the headquarters of British Telecom. Back in the day, that was their research center. And I was one of the first teachers to be trained in how to use the intranet. The intranet came out before the internet, and that was fascinating. And I remember in 1997 having the opportunity to use the old dial-up. Remember the old dial-up system where you actually heard the
yes, with the modem.
The modem, yeah, the old modem. Yeah, and that was the way I met my American wife. And we talked online for 6 months or so, just in a chat room about life in the UK and life in New York. No intentions of dating, because obviously back then there was no such thing as online dating. And my wife flew over to London for a visit, just to visit London, and we hit it off. And I think we were one of the first couples back in the day to actually find success in online dating. So there you go. And I have used it ever since. I mean, my marriage didn't last. It was very hard to make it work internationally.
Shame, I'm sorry, but,
yeah. But yeah, all things are good. Yeah. So I'm very good about that. But neither of my children met anybody online. So it's just you pay your money, you take your choice. But it's good to have the option. And I'm a great believer in the internet, Jeremy, as you know. I mean, I started Principia Scientific 13 years ago now, and it was the only way to meet like-minded people opposed to the climate fraud. Because as you know full well, the mainstream media will allow no debate. And we were frustrated at the time, and going online, it was wonderful because there was far less online censorship back then. You could, if you were, you know, pretty savvy about it, you know, meet people online in different countries. I met quite a lot of people in North America, many in Australia. Very lucky to met Malcolm Roberts online. Malcolm Roberts is now a senator in the Australian government. And back in the day, he was an engineer. And like myself, kindred spirit, trying to expose the fraud of climate change, the boondoggle that is carbon credits. How if you invest in carbon credits, you can save the planet. We were shocked by that. And you know, touch wood, luckily we had the internet, and we still have the internet. And guys like Malcolm Roberts grabbed the opportunity, and you know, spreading truth is what we do, isn't it, Jeremy? We try and spread truth and let people know that there's more than one narrative to look at.
Yeah, just quickly before we go to a break, I just want to ask Murray, how did you meet your wife? Or did you meet online or in real life? Sort of. Okay, hold on. So Murray's going to let me know how he met. I'll tell you what, while you let me know, Murray, let's quickly go to a break.
Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott has welcomed Joe Biden for the president's long-awaited visit to the southern U.S. border by hand-delivering a letter demanding that the federal government addresses the worst illegal immigration crisis in the nation's history. It seems to be a little pattern emerging here. Everywhere's experiencing the worst ever illegal immigration crisis, and boy, have we banged on about it here on Locked and Loaded last year, and hell's bells will I be banging on about it into 2023. It is an absolute disgrace and an abomination, and I'm not racist and I don't hate people. I don't like to see my society and country being destroyed. And it's not being destroyed by immigrants, it's being destroyed by our government. So yes, you're right, we shouldn't demonize these men. We should be demonizing the scumbags that are letting these men into the country and encouraging them to come here. I agree, Mr. Lefty. We shouldn't be demonizing these men. We should be going for the government, because they are the instigators and the perpetrators. And so say all of us. Bang.
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. 90% of parents still say no thanks to COVID-19 shots for their young children. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
John, just quickly before we chat about the climate stuff that you were mentioning, just during the break, now Murray was telling me how he and his wife met. I won't give the full story, but it is adorable. They met in a way that Holly in the live chat would love. They met basically through radio. I mean, how precious is that? I miss that. I wish I grew up in... Sorry, I'm not trying to make you sound old, Murray, but I wish I grew up in that generation, you know, when you had to be creative. You don't have to be creative these days. You just open an app.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, I mean, the app thing is wonderful. I mean, I use my smartphone a lot, and I know a lot of people use their smartphones, but the trouble with smartphones is very bad for your neck, very bad for your posture, and not good for your eyesight either. I try and avoid using it. And I've got to the point now, Jeremy, where I've actually figured out how to hook up my TV to my phone. So I'm there, sat on the sofa, looking at the TV screen, nice big widescreen TV, and trying to do things off my laptop or my phone. I think it's doing wonders for my eyesight. I don't know about you, but all this smart technology, I don't think it's healthy.
I don't watch TV that much. I agree with you. I'm not a huge fan of smart technology, but I'm also fibbing a little bit, because I do enjoy it. As Catherine Fitz says, you know, it's here, it's with us. So just try and be, you know, discerning with the technology. You don't need to sit and play video games all day long and just waste your life away or look at porn, but you can certainly be highly productive with it. I mean, for example, the same technology that we might be you know, dunking on is what we're using right now to actually promote a message of freedom and of, you know, winning.
Yeah, and what we do, you know, you and I and Murray and everybody else at TNT Radio, what we do is we're taking advantage of the technology. We're putting it to good use, aren't we? We're giving it a chance for people on our side of the debate to have their say, to become communities online, and to, you know, be reactionary to the massive fraud that's been going on around the world. I mean, without this kind of technology, without the access to it, we couldn't coordinate. I mean, I can tell you, during the lockdowns here in the UK, the smartphone was a wonderful tool, because I've attended lockdown protests, and the way to get around it was to coordinate through your smartphone. We knew we had online censorship, so we exchanged numbers, we met up at rallies. People were very eager to exchange details, and the mobile phone was a godsend during that whole crisis. And without it, I don't think we'd have had so many protests. And we had, I believe, the biggest protest in London was over 1 million people. So I don't think that would have happened without smart technology, Jeremy, and I'm pretty sure that's a good thing.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, I know that I'll get shot at for saying this, but I really do enjoy the convenience of smartphones at times. You know, I'll give you a good example, and I'm sure you will agree, Murray will agree, I think everybody will agree. And even if you disagree outwardly, deep down inside, I know you agree. When you're walking through an airport and you got to go through all those multiple security checks, and you've got luggage in your left hand, and you're trying to carry your passport and your ID and everything in your one hand, and you just cannot do everything. And these days, I don't know about on your side of the world, but in South Africa, because of the whole COVID nonsense, now they aren't allowed to touch your ID book or your card or anything. They can't touch anything of yours. You have to scan everything yourself and all that. They can make no contact with your stuff. So now things are falling on the ground, and you got to put your bag down, and there's people rushing behind you, and everybody's annoyed. So you're trying to get through this thing as fast as possible. Now, yeah, with the advent of like an Apple wallet, you know, it puts everything on your screen, and everything is just so much quicker.
Yeah. That's the upside, and I'm very much for that. But one thing that we should be concerned about, Jeremy, is the dangers of EMF, electromagnetic frequency. That's a big issue for Principia Scientific International. We've had some wonderful people on my Sky Dragon Slaying show, experts in their field, about the dangers of EMF, and it's akin to being exposed to the risk of cancers. We had a wonderful expert, Dr. Nisa Khan. Dr. Nisa Khan worked for Bell Laboratories. She's a world leader in a field of LEDs. And she came on our show and talked to us about the dangers of EMF and the fact that it is akin to like cigarette smoking. The more you're exposed to it, the higher the risk. And we should be very, very careful that how much EMF we have in our life. And EMF is basically everything wireless. You know, you've got your earbuds. You know, people now walk around with earbuds in their ears, with a smartphone in the pocket. You know, and your Wi-Fi signals are all around you. It's ubiquitous. And because you don't see it, Jeremy, doesn't mean it's not having an impact on your body. And enough studies have been done to show that we should be concerned. But the problem is, as you know, big business that work hand in hand with politicians, and they don't really want this kind of thing brought into the public domain very much. So there's money to be made, and obviously money is being made, that the safety issues are usually last on the list of priorities. And as you know, that there's a medical condition called electrohypersensitivity, EHS. And it actually goes back to the original term of tinfoil hat wearers. Tinfoil hat wearers were the original people who concerned themselves about electrohypersensitivity. And we talked about things like a Faraday cage. A Faraday cage is a wonderful device to protect yourself from exposure to EMF. And it does work. It does work. You want to protect yourself as much as possible. And, you know, you can buy these bags now. You can buy them on Amazon. You can even buy them on Amazon now, where you can buy a bag and put your smartphone in the bag and protect yourself from EMF. And
what you could also do, surely, John, is can't you just turn off your Bluetooth and Wi-Fi as well? Just put it onto airplane mode when you leave the house, for example.
Yeah. Anything like that, it's all mitigation. It all helps. Yeah. But obviously, there are people who are ultra sensitive, and depending on your sensitivity, it's like an allergy. If you have an allergy to anything, you know, you can be severely allergic, you can be mildly allergic, and we're trying to frame the debate more like that now, because it's an untold story. It needs to be discussed. And there's a campaign in here in the UK. People are asking for buses and trains to have a compartment that's Wi-Fi free, so you don't have exposure to EMF. And, you know, it's something to consider. It's a debate to be had. But at the moment, we don't see it, that kind of issue raised on the mainstream media. But like, if you think back to the days of heavy smoking, it took 20 or 30 years before the public was aware of the dangers of cigarette smoking because of vested interests. So many people don't want you to know there's a health risk. And while they hold sway, you know, we won't have that debate.
Okay, John, I quickly have to do news headlines. I'll be back with you now.
TNT Radio News.
Huge news, 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 news.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. The scandal plaguing the White House deepened over the weekend after it was revealed yet another set of stolen top-secret documents had been found at President Biden's home. A gas pipeline connecting Lithuania and Latvia has exploded, severing one of two parallel lines, and America is setting the stage for conflict in the Pacific after US President Joe Biden ordered its top naval strike group into the South China Sea in order to provoke a response from Beijing.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
You know, John, I chatted with Daphna Tarkova. She headed up the 5G and wireless harms project for Children's Health Defense. And she also used to work in telecommunications and Intel, as far as I remember, for the IDF. And she was on my show and she was chatting to me about the harms of all things wireless. And, you know, she makes a comment that you must turn off your Wi-Fi router at night when you go to bed and keep your phone in a different room and all that sort of stuff and try and keep things plugged in as much as possible rather than, you know, going through the air.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, we had published an article on Principia Scientific International in October. A peer-reviewed paper came out on this very issue, and it challenges the safety of unlimited wireless exposure. And she's right. I agree. You have to have a break. You need to put time aside, ideally, as you say, at night. If you can switch everything off at night, take your phone out of your bedroom, you're giving your body a break from it. Again, it's the analogy of being exposed to cigarette smoke. If you're always in a room of heavy smokers, you're always exposed to it, you're always going to have a higher risk. Therefore, you know, be prudent about it, minimize your risk, take it out of your life, switch your phone off when you can. And I'll give you an example of what these scientists are saying. The International Commission on the Biological Effects of Electromagnetic Fields, they're the authority that authored this report, and they confirmed that the U.S. Federal Communications Commission are still relying on data collected in the 1980s. That's how long ago it's been since any true government tests have been done in this field. So but we're using safety tests done, you know, pretty much of 30, 40, 50 years ago, and they're not valid today because the rate of exposure today is far, far higher. And it's not just the level of exposure, it's the duration of exposure. And Dr. Ronald Melnick, one of the key authors, said that, you know, even low intensity exposure, if it's continuous, can do harm. And it's permeating the blood-brain barrier and causing sperm damage, DNA damage, and neurological disorders. And these are from eminent scientists. Again, it's the International Commission on the Biological Effects of Electromagnetic Fields. And so these are eminent in their field. But again, you won't be seeing this on the mainstream media, Jeremy.
You know, I said I was going to get some pushback for my comments about using things like Apple Wallet. And you know, other convenience based things, and of course in the live chat a couple of people are taking issue with that, talking about tracking, etc. Yes, I know all of that. I was laughing when I made the comment saying, you do know that these things are actually just more convenient. I think I even said that. We choose our battles, John. If you want to go through the airport carrying stuff in your hands, that's also fine. I do that for the most part. But I am saying that sometimes convenience is just so much better and easier. And then you choose your battles. I mean, so, you know, let me give an example of convenience. In 2020 and 2021, I had to fly between Cape Town and Johannesburg a few times. So here's what you do for convenience sake. Do you then listen to the airport and the airline and put on a mask for the duration of that flight? It's 2 hours. Or do you say, no, I can't do this and I'm going to drive. And you have to drive 1,500 kilometers and basically make the entire trip useless. I think in some instances you can make a case for why you just put on the damn mask for that 2 hours. That all depends on which battle you want to fight at this time, because we all know an airport is not a battle that you will ever win on your own. Right. You just cannot win that. And if you've got 180 people inside the plane and you've got massive amounts of airport security, you're going to lose. That's it. So you have to decide, is this the battle I'm willing to lose? And when I come back, I'll fight some more battles, or do I just, you know, forfeit this trip? It just depends. I, for example, haven't had a PCR test or the jab, but I did have to fly. Well, I chose to fly between cities and sort of kind of wear a mask during the trip.
Yeah. I take your point, Jeremy. And I mean, I'm kind of more the more extreme end of the spectrum. I never wore a mask. I refused everything. And as you say, if you stand up to authority, you pay the price. And I've been arrested. As I said earlier, I've been on lockdown protests and I've been arrested. And I spent, on two occasions, I spent 24 hours in a police cell. And that's not a pleasant experience. Mm. But, you know, a lot of people would think, well, is that a smart thing to do if you've got other priorities in life? I mean, well, I'm lucky, Jeremy. I'm pretty much a single guy. I don't have children to worry about. You know, I'm pretty much self-funding. And a guy like me can make that gesture. But if you're a mother or father and young children to think about, you wouldn't do that. We'd be very unwise to do that.
Yeah.
So as you say, you have to pick your battles, don't you?
Yeah, well, it's for that reason that my wife and I haven't left the country, because we refuse to get a fake vaccine card and we refuse to go through the PCR test nonsense. So those are battles that we just simply will not even engage in.
No, I'm with you on that one. And there are other ways to do it as well. And I think coming together online in organizations and doing mass protests. You know, let's talk about another topic. Let's bring in the other topic you mentioned before the show, Martin Luther King. I mean, we were going to talk a little bit about the statue. Martin Luther King, for those who don't know, was a wonderful civil rights advocate back in the 1960s for black rights, for civil rights for black people, and did amazing work. And in honor of him, that in Boston, they've unveiled a new statue. And it's causing a bit of furore on Twitter, because a lot of people are mocking the statue. And I didn't know why until I looked at the photographs of the statue. And I'm not impressed.
It's basically it's basically two hands or three hands holding a penis.
Yeah, that's my impression until I read about it. And what it's meant to be, Martin Luther King and his wife embracing a critical time in their journey on the civil rights movement. And yeah, I mean, from certain angles, because it's obviously a three-dimensional 22-foot-high sculpture, from certain angles, to me, it looked like, because it's very brown, it's like a bronze statue, it looked like two hands holding a giant turd. You know, it shocked me to think that this kind of thing passes muster, because, again, you're going to get ridiculed, aren't you? It's from different angles, it looks obscene. And the Twitter response was just damning. You know, from certain angles, people are saying it looks like a giant penis. As we said, the color of it gives the impression of a giant turd. You know, is it the kind of image you want to create for somebody who's an icon of civil rights?
No, let's be honest. It really is not great. I mean, I saw someone making a comparison with a sculpture that a 23-year-old made a few hundred years ago. And it was, you know, it was in the flavor of King David, you know, like Michelangelo style. I mean, what is this nonsense? It really isn't anything to be proud of.
No, no. And the other thing is, you've got to think about the cost. I believe it cost $10 million, Jeremy. you know, and that's public money. You know, it's a commissioned piece of public art. I'm not so sure the people, the local community, will welcome that, because it, to me, is a poor investment. But there you go. If you hire an up and coming young artist to do the work, that's what you get. And there's been racist comments about it as well, because they're saying it's actually meant to be an attack on an iconic black man, and saying would a white man be honored in such a way with only two limbs around a turd? You know, they've opened a can of worms here, haven't they, really?
It really is an embarrassment. I think it's just a complete waste of money. And I mean, they could have done a better job.
Yeah. Well, the family are not happy. Seneca Scott, who's a Coretta King's cousin, Coretta King being the wife of Martin Luther King, who's depicted in the statue, she said it's an insult to my family. The sculpture is egregious, an example of the woke machine's callousness and vanity. So even the Martin Luther King family are not at all happy with this so-called homage to the great leader.
And he was assassinated, obviously, by a lone gunman, because that's the official story, and the official story is never false.
Well, that's right. You can never doubt the official story. We know that the COVID virus began from a bat in Wuhan in a back street market. That's all true, isn't it? Yeah, obviously, yeah.
You know what upsets me about that, John, is it's always the poor animals that are to blame. Like now it's a bat. Shame. Does nobody ever think about the animals?
No, they're too busy eating them. You know, the McDonald roller. I mean, we've got a big campaign right here in the UK at the moment. Every billboard you pass, it's like McDonald's are advertising their plant burger. The big plant burger. I mean, that died a death in America a few months ago. It's a joke. Oh, what a nightmare. Nobody will be buying it, but this is the power of advertising. You know, the plant burger is here. They're encouraging you to eat it to save the planet, because it's better than meat, they say. I don't think so. Look at the ingredients. I don't think it's at all healthy, but people will try it maybe. I don't know.
So
what's your thought?
Diet and nutrition is something that I am very interested in. I talk about it fairly often on TNT. I have no issue with people who are vegetarian or vegan or have plant-based diets or whatever. I'm not like that, though. I find it, it's just, I don't think it's terribly healthy in the long run. But having said that, I have been to an abattoir, and I mean, I don't know if you've been to one. Have you been to an abattoir, Murray? It is an awful experience. And I think that everybody should go to an abattoir once in their life, just to understand the terrible, terrible conditions under which animals are subjected. It is just awful. If you become vegetarian from that, then I understand. But it led me, John, to, you know, going into hunting, because then at least I'm catching my own food, as it were, and it's free range, and it's much healthier, and the animals are absolutely not subjected to that nonsense. That, I mean, chickens, oh my word, people don't understand. Have you ever been to a chicken battery? It is absolutely appalling, and it's so sad.
I got to tell you, I once, many, many, many years ago, I worked in a chicken packing factory, and I was on the production line packing chickens, and as you say, brutal. It's not pleasant. Nice. But we sanitize the whole process of animal slaughter and processing. And when you are the consumer, you're going to the supermarket, you open up the fridge, your counter, whatever, everything neatly packaged. And you don't really have any conception of where it came from or the process it has to go through. But you know, what is the alternative? I really don't want to be chowing down on critters. You know, Bill Gates,
alternative.
Should all be eating it.
I know what the alternative is. No, John, the alternative, it is quite simple. You must listen to my shows with Jim Gale. The alternative actually is taking a stand against mega farming. There's a concept that we don't really talk about. Mega farming is why we have this issue. We need to decentralize. We have to decentralize our farming. Once you can break apart the mega farming sort of ultra commercialization of farming, you bring it down into a decentralized manner that's more targeted towards smaller communities. They can still make good money. It's not, there's nothing anti-capitalist about it. But decentralization, I think, is how you bring apart that awful, awful sort of mass production of animals. I mean, I eat meat, but I do think that the conditions that they are subjected to are just terrible. And it's, I think, a result of hyper-industrialization, hyper-commercialization of animals. Hold on. Murray says we must just quickly go to a break. Let's continue this in a moment.
On the same day that the Attorney General of the United States announced the appointment of a special counsel to look into the discovery of classified documents found at Biden locations, the left began the narrative that those documents may have been planted. The View said Republicans could have done it. Here's Georgia Democrat Congressman Hank Johnson, who spoke to Fox.
But I'm suspicious of the timing of it. I'm also aware of the fact that things can be planted on people. Places and things can be planted. Things can be planted in places and then discovered conveniently. That may be what has occurred here. I'm not ruling that out.
This is the same man who said this about the island of Guam at a 2010 congressional hearing discussing a military buildup on the island.
The whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
Yes, he feared Guam would capsize. So as you can see, Congressman Johnson is obviously a brain surgeon who should always be taken seriously. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The World Economic Forum's Global Shapers community is active in 147 countries. It boasts of its network of young people driving dialogue, action, and change. The Global Shapers community recruits young people to further the aims of Klaus Schwab's technocrats at the World Economic Forum. This is a program to control the world and eliminate individual freedom. This is a program for a circular economy, a belt-tightening economy. The Global Shapers community started in 2011. It claims to be a grassroots network and offer youth-led solutions for change. But it is run top-down and grooms youth for future lavish leadership roles and promotes sustainable consumption for the masses to address a non-existent climate crisis. Future young leaders deserve better, such as optimistic vision of freedom, creativity, and economic growth.
Jeremy Nell
on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, John, back to that conversation about meat. So like someone in the comment was criticizing me earlier because I was saying that convenience is a good thing. But I mean, you know what really bugs me is when people say stuff like that, but they don't realize that they're not holding up the mirror. I mean, for example, if you're talking about convenience, are you, or compliance, you know, are they examples of non-compliance or non-convenience in everything? I go hunting. You know how inconvenient that is. But I do that so that I don't have to legitimize as much as possible the abattoir industry and the mega farming industry, for example.
Yeah, it's a good point. My grandfather worked in an abattoir, and I remember as a young boy, about 10 years old, going into the abattoir, and its smell hits you straight away. It's an awful smell. I can't, you know, say anything nice about it. It's the process of life and death. We need to eat.
Yeah.
I take your point entirely that you should just think about your local communities. And I think a lot of money is being made internationally. You know, shipping livestock around the world is not ideal. And I think the closer we get to nature, the better. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm definitely not a tree-hugging person at all, but I do believe in being sympathetic to your environment. It's called considerate husbandry. Husbandry is a term, you know, animal husbandry, you know, being considerate to environment. The North American Indians practiced that, didn't they? They lived in harmony with nature. And there's nothing wrong with that. I do agree with that. I'm not a fan of exploitation. And we're so far removed. And I think that's the problem now, we are so far removed from nature, very few of us get to experience nature. And again, another one of my guests, I can't remember the guest name offhand, but the idea of grounding yourself is very helpful. Mm. If you want to mitigate against the effects of EMF, try walking in bare feet on the ground, going out in nature, yeah, going to the beach, you know, walking barefoot in the nice weather, touching a tree, these kind of things. It's all part of the earthing process. And as we know, earthing is a genuine technical term in electronics. You need to earth. The human body is basically an electrical system, and we have to be aware of that. And we do need to moderate our exposure to EMF. And the idea of earthing, it just feels good anyway, doesn't it? You just know instinctively when you're out in the sun, in your bare feet, it just feels good.
But John, I mean, I agree with you. I'm also not a tree hugger, but here's the deal. I think if we are honest with ourselves, we will know that the tree huggers had a point. And I think that there is plenty of good values or principles that we can get from that. There is nothing wrong with being a good custodian of your environment. There's nothing wrong with that. Nobody's saying that you must stop using light bulbs or stop driving your car because you think that you're heating up Earth. But for goodness sake, what's wrong with keeping your environment, your immediate environment, clean? You know, do you don't need to throw stuff on the ground. You can keep it neat. You don't have to live in filth. You know, you can drink, can drink clean water. And by the way, you can actually taste the difference between mineral water and tap water, at least where I am. I can taste, I can taste, it just tastes better to drink, to drink mineral water or filtered water. It's just much nicer, you know, and hunted meat is just more tasty than abattoir meat, for example. And just to add to that, sorry, but I just wanted to quickly add to that, a way in which you can support decentralized farming, I suppose, or non-mega farming, is just look for a local butcher, for example, or a local a local shop. What do you call it? I don't know. I've gone blank now. But somebody, a grocer. Look for those who are not. Those who are not part of the big chains.
Yeah, you know, the big supermarkets, their business model is to locate in communities that depend on their local producer and undercut them in price. And they do it as a very cynical strategy because they put them out of business. They drive down costs temporarily, drive the local retailer out of business, and then put the prices back up again. And I think that's shocking. And I think that that's certainly something we should look at as a wider community and think about how we preserve and encourage local produce. And, there's so much value, from things grown locally, because you get to know people, don't you? If you know your local butcher, you know that he's sourcing things responsibly. But when you go to speak to the manager of a supermarket, you know, they're not even local. They often, you know, they're shipped in from another community. And they're on a career ladder and they don't care about you or your community, and they're there to make money.
And I never used to be. I mean, if you had spoken to me in 2019 before all this madness, I would have had a fairly cynical view. I'd say, there's nothing wrong with what you buy from the shop. It's quick and easy and there's nothing wrong with it. But all you have to do for yourself is just go to a local butcher or to a local grocer and just buy. Or go to find a local farmer, you know, and buy vegetables from him. It's just so much tastier. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, that doesn't really fit in with the globalist agenda, does it? Though the globalist agenda really is to centralize everything, to do away with growing things locally, and the move is also to prevent people from growing produce in their own gardens of all things. You know that. As you may know, the UK, especially in the Second World War, was known for the allotments. People would have called them allotments, where you'd have a strip of land where you could grow your own veggies. You can grow your potatoes. You could grow, tomatoes, all sorts of wonderful. My grandparents used to love doing this. Took great pleasure. And it's so good for your mind, so good for your soul to actually grow your own tomatoes, grow your own veggies. It's healthy to be out gardening. And we've lost that connection with nature, haven't we?
We have. My wife has got green fingers, so she's very good at growing veggies. And I sometimes don't know if something that's on our plate comes from our garden or from the shop. Murray, is your wife a good cook? He's nodding. Murray's nodding. He's giving two thumbs up.
Yeah, good old Murray. Yeah. And the other point being that I just want to add to that. You know, the other point being that again, it's a source of extra income, isn't it? If you grow your own produce, you could say I know when I was a kid, a lot of my local neighbors used to grow fruits, and we used to go apple scrumping, go into the orchard and, you know, have bags and bags of apples and take it home to mum and cook them up and have apple pie and, you know, wonderful memories doing that. But you don't see that anymore, do you?
No. By the way, just before we go, I see time is against us. Before we go, John, did you listen to my conversation with Naomi Zeipt?
No, I missed that. Sorry.
Oh, my word. What a pleasure it was listening. Murray, you were there. Hey, you were listening. Yeah, man, she was just, John, you need to go back and listen to that. In fact, listen to that. Anybody who's listening right now, go onto the TNT app and go and listen to my show with Naomi Zeipt. It was out of this world, next level. She's 22 years old. John, she's got more wisdom in that brain of hers than most people our age.
Yeah, they call her the antidote to Greta Thunberg, don't they?
Well, yeah, initially it was the anti-Greta, but she hates it. She hates that label.
Right, yeah. It's an easy thing to resort to, because we needed that. We needed somebody who genuinely was an advocate. And I have seen her before. I have seen her. Is she German? I believe she's European.
She's German. Yeah.
German, yeah.
That's
yeah.
why, I mean, that's why, so that's well. Why her surname is Zeipt.
Yeah,
she's unbelievable.
Very articulate, and she can take questions. Unlike Greta Thunberg, Greta Thunberg just reads off a script. You know, you actually try and take it to the side and ask a question. She's dumbfounded, and that's the issue. That's child abuse, I think.
I just want to quickly say something, John. When we talk about these concepts, don't you think it's fantastic that somebody like Naomi, who's 22 years old, can also grasp that concept? And don't you wish that there were more 22-year-olds? I mean, think about it. She's the next generation.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And people like that should be brought to the fore because they're role models, they're leaders. We need leaders. There's a shortage of genuine leaders. My biggest beef is with the World Economic Forum, you know, Klaus Schwab, who actually grooms leaders. Not because they're people who are compliant, not because they've got things to say, but because they're malleable, they're you know, easily controlled. And I think that has been a problem for too long now, that so-called leaders are really just puppets, aren't they? There's somebody behind,
you know, something.
The scenes. Yep.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I think that too many people are working behind the scenes. Even Joe Biden's a perfect example of somebody who's merely a puppet. He's the front man, and you know that he's not controlling any real policy matters at all, is he? And it's always somebody behind the scenes who can use the old term of plausible deniability, that they're not in control. They're the ones who really are pulling the strings and, you know, implementing policies.
But something that Jim Gale taught me. Yeah, but okay, hold on. Let me go back a step. So permaculture, for example, is a philosophy. It doesn't just apply to growing food. It's the philosophy of abundance. And think about this for a second, right? If you want to take down the World Economic Forum, do we daily sit and moan and try and remove them, which is not going to happen? Or how about this? Do we, over the next few years, try and also create competing forums, but with better ideas where we can get people to go? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. We need that. You know, what better place than TNT Radio? I mean, like you, I'm looking at the chat now. I'm looking at the comments we're getting in the chat, and we're reflecting on it. We're having a discussion, an unplanned discussion, which is wonderful. You and I are pretty much just riffing through the show, and things are coming out that I hadn't considered before. You know, you've just given me a good pointer. I'll go and look at listen to Naomi's interview with you. You know, thank you for that. This is organic, isn't it? It's an organic way of interchanging, exchanging ideas. It's the proper way of doing it, rather than the propaganda of the mainstream media.
Okay, John, quickly, do some promo for your show.
Yeah, I co-host Sky Dragon Slaying on TNT Radio. We broadcast between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. New York time. Obviously, it's early morning Sundays on Saturday. My co-host, Joe Olson, who's a wonderful engineer from Houston, Texas. My other co-host is Joe Posmer, space scientist from Calgary. We have so many great guests. It's science-focused. We discuss science issues you don't see in the mainstream media. As we said earlier, the issue of EMF, these are the kind of issues that people want to know about. And I think it's extremely important to hear more than one side of the argument. The mainstream narrative should not be trusted. And there are many, many eminent scientists out there, as we saw through the pandemic, who are only now being listened to. And it's such a shame that it takes so long to bring that out. And TNT Radio, we do have that forum. You know, science discussion is coming to the fore, independent and fair.
John, gotta go. Thank you for joining me in the trenches. By the way, John O'Sullivan, you have given me an inspiration for upcoming shows. I'm going to look into EMF. Thank you so much for that tip as well. Thank you, Murray, for keeping me going this hour. I'll be back tomorrow. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.